I would have stuck around after what you did to me? I ask, tears stabbing at my eyes again. Seeing him like this, all perfectly put together, with his perfect face and perfect everything, my heart breaks in my chest that he can act like nothing happened when everything happened.
What are you talking about?
He frowns. Don't you dare pretend you don't know, I accuse, raising my hand to wipe a tear from my cheek. Don't you dare, Caleb Hale! I'm going to the sheriff. I'll tell him everything and...
What, Darcy? What the hell are you talking about?
He repeats, and the question is like an arrow to my heart. You raped me, I hiss. You raped me, Caleb, and you dare ask me what happened? He looks as if struck by lightning.
What did you say?
He asks, this time his tone gentler, yet nonetheless holding the same firm quality to it. You know exactly what I mean. I saw the evidence. The blood. I whimper at the memory, and pain assails me once more.
Darcy.
He takes a step towards me, but I put my hand up to keep him from encroaching on my personal space.
Darling, I never did that.
He says in the softest voice.
I never raped you. You can't possibly believe.
There was blood, I croak. You know I've never been with a man before. You know that. The more I speak of it, the more the tears won't stop.
There was blood.
He agrees.
From your wounds. You fell on a bed of rocks, Darcy. You hurt yourself all over.
He explains as he tries to come closer again. I shake my head. You undressed me. You took everything off.
Yes.
There it is. The admission.
You were soaking wet. I couldn't let you catch a chill, and that's why I know all the places you injured yourself.
But the blood...
There was a small gash on your upper thigh. You can confirm its existence. It probably continued to bleed even after I put you to bed.
What? No, there's no way. I don't believe you.
Darcy.
He takes a deep breath.
Aside from the blood, do you feel sore between your legs?
My brows pinch together at his question, and I slowly shake my head.
Do you feel any pain at all there?
He continues, and once more I shake my head.
Then there you have it, darling. Nothing happened. I promise you.
He adds poignantly, and God, but I almost believe him. My cheeks heat as he explains that for the amount of blood I'd seen, I would have had to tear down there pretty badly, and that would have resulted in intense pain. I don't know how he knows all of that, but I have to admit that aside from the visible injuries, nothing else hurts, certainly not the area between my legs. Now I feel foolish for jumping to conclusions, but after his previous behavior, how could I not? Then what about before that, when you...
When I...
He raises a brow. You were asking me all those inappropriate questions, telling me I was your bad girl and...
Darcy.
He says my name as if horrified.
Darling, I think we need to get you to a medic as fast as we can. I didn't think you hit your head that bad, but that never happened.
What? What are you talking about? You said that. You insinuated I was easy, that I...
I never did any of that, darling.
He sighs, exasperated.
It started raining when we reached the cabin. When you got out of the car, you tripped and fell on the bed of rocks right next to it. You were out of it the entire afternoon.
Blinking. I can't believe what he's saying. I know what happened. That's not true. You were sick, and I helped you to the cabin. Then I went to pick some plants to make you tea, and... Your eyes... They were red.
Red eyes?
A look of horror flashes across his face.
Darcy, darling, you're worrying me. That never happened.
What? I ask in shock. What does he mean, it never happened? I remember it clearly.
I was never sick, and you never went to pick out plants. Please think about it.
No, that can't be. I stare at him in befuddlement as I replay every event from the day before. His words ring in my ear. The way he'd behaved, I can't possibly have imagined all of it. Yet as I think back to this morning, I admit to myself that there was no trace of the fire I'd built, not even ash left behind. I hadn't noticed that then as I was in a hurry to leave. At the same time, I have a hard time grasping how this could have all been a product of my imagination, because... how? A whimper escapes me. Dear God, can he be right? Is this all in my head? Was it another dream?
Darcy.
He calls my name with such heartfelt longing that I can't help but raise my gaze to his, finding only sincerity. There are no signs of deception, only worry, and that makes me more confused than ever.
Can I come closer?
He asks. And God, it's like he's an entirely different person than the one from yesterday. The one from my dream. I give him a brisk nod, and he wastes no time in pulling me to his chest, hugging me tightly.
I'm so sorry I left this morning, but I had to get to town and get more supplies. You have no idea how scared I was when I found you gone, but please believe me that nothing like that happened. I would never touch you without your permission. You know that?
He murmurs, drawing back to see my expression. Do I? Do I know that? I don't know you, Caleb. I speak slowly, the information from before slowly settling in. That means I also don't trust you. I realize now it was a mistake to get in your car yesterday, and it's a mistake to be with you alone.
Don't. Oh, darling, don't say that. I want us to get to know each other. That's why I promised I'd vouch for you with Mordecai. I want you near.
He declares. Biting my lip, I regard him quietly for a moment. I don't know, I whisper. How can one go from hating someone so much one moment to finding out the hate was based on nothing? How can I react to that? This morning I was rueing the day I ever set eyes on him, but now his soft words and gentle looks make me reconsider everything.
I won't rush you with anything. Just let me take care of you.
He whispers as he slowly pats my hair.
I don't have any nefarious intentions with you, Darcy. On the contrary, my intentions are all honorable.
What do you mean? I suddenly pull back, frowning.
Exactly what you think I mean.
He smiles. I'm struck speechless. I stare at him and I cannot comprehend anything. Is he handsome? Yes. Is he entirely dreamy? Also yes. But there's also something else about him. The same sinister energy I felt in my dreams, I still feel now. But maybe it's just this town messing with my head. That and the fact that with each passing day I turn more and more like Catherine. I wonder what's next. Ghosts? Demons? Zombies? We could get to know each other. I finally relent. If it was all a dream, then it's not fair to keep him accountable for something that's solely a product of my imagination. Yet that doesn't erase the fact that I'm wary about him, about everything he makes me feel. Perhaps that's the issue. I've never felt like this before, so I'm unsure whether this fluttering in my stomach is because I'm drawn to him, or because he instills in me terror unlike I've ever known. He gives me the biggest grin. But... I put a finger up. I'm not moving into the Hale House. I'm staying at Astor Place. I tell him firmly. You will take me on dates, in public. And I don't know what you may think of me, but I'm not modern like other girls. I will not sleep with you, or anyone else, until marriage. An amused look crosses his face at my list of demands, but he doesn't protest any.
Anything else?
As a matter of fact, yes. I want a notarized statement about your finances. If you say you are serious about me, then I must be certain it is not because of my inheritance. At that, he laughs.
Darcy, darling, you're a gem.
I narrow my eyes at him.
Of course. You'll have your statement. I can vouch that I am not penniless, nor am I a fortune hunter. I happen to have quite a sizable net worth.
Well, I push my chin up. You better. Still laughing, he tugs me closer, his arms coming around me as he keeps me fitted to his body. Despite everything that happened, my own body reacts to the nearness, my heart skipping a beat just as my stomach does some odd somersaults.
Why don't I take you on a date now, then?
He murmurs in my ear. My cheeks heat up, and I nod.
Why don't I take you on a date now, then? But first, we're visiting the medic.
I don't protest as he leads me to his car, taking me to the medic's office. After all, I am worried about it as well. How could I have made up entire interactions in my head? How could I have come up with such scenarios? The office ends up being a short distance away, and luckily, the primary physician is Emmett Bailey, a friend of the Hales, which allows me to go in without an appointment.
The wound looks good,
he notes as he examines my head injury.
You did well to clean it and dress it, Caleb.
Could I have hallucinated because of it? He nods.
It's highly probable, but I don't think there should be more reason to worry. I'll dress the wound again and prescribe you some medication in case you get a headache.
He goes on to show me how to dress the wound by myself after I take a shower, and advises me to visit again if I have problems with hallucinations again. Caleb is leaning against the wall, intently watching Dr. Bailey's every move. Tension radiates from him, and even Dr. Bailey can feel it, every now and then glancing at him for approval before touching me. And every time, Caleb barely gives him a strained nod, as if that small acquiescence costs him everything.
Let's tend to the other injuries,
he says, asking me to show him the gash on my thigh.
That will be enough for today, Emmett,
he interjects in a thick voice.
I'm sure Darcy can do that herself.
A look of confusion crosses Dr. Bailey's face for a moment before he takes a step back, his hands in the air in a gesture of surrender.
Of course.
He readily acquiesces, adding a few more bandages to my package. Not a few minutes later, and we're out of the office. Caleb has a tight expression on his face, his fists clenched by his side, and I can't figure out what set him off. What's wrong? I grab his shirt, stopping him. Did something happen? Turning, he takes a deep breath, his eyes glinting dangerously as he regards me.
I don't like other men's hands on you, Darcy,
he drawls.
I thought I could bear it for your sake, but all I could think of was him touching your pretty face and your delicate neck, and I was close to losing it.
He exhales.
I'm still close to losing it,
he admits as he brings his gaze to mine, showing me all the turmoil hiding there. It was just a checkup, Caleb, I add softly, patting him lightly on the shoulder. Dr. Bailey was just doing his job.
Because I didn't do mine,
he rasps. I frown.
I didn't protect you. I'm sorry about that, Precious,
he whispers, cupping my face between his big hands and leaning in to place a kiss right next to my injury. It happens. I laugh nervously, though my skin tingles from where it met his lips.
It shouldn't. Not to you. Not now, nor ever.
He he says vehemently.
You're mine to take care of, Darcy, darling. You get that?
My lashes flutter in confusion. He hasn't even taken me on a date, and he's already claiming me as his? It's too early for that, Caleb. I force a smile on my face as I draw back. He narrows his eyes at me.
I don't think you understand me, Darcy.
He punctuates each word.
You belong to me.
He growls.
I might go slow for you, but don't imagine for one moment that you're not mine.
Pursing my lips, I don't know how to reply. I know that if I protest, he's going to turn even more overbearing. Instead, I merely give him a tentative smile. Caleb Hale is an enigma I can't solve. Add in the fact that I'm having trouble differentiating reality from hallucination, and I simply don't know how to read him or his intentions. As we get in the car, he suggests we go to one of the less popular diners in town for lunch, and our first official date. I agree, though after the last time at the diner, I'm not too thrilled to come face to face with the townsfolk, who'd decided I must be the devil's disciple.
You're quiet,
Caleb notes as he drives.
Does your wound still pain you?
I shake my head. Still ruminating over what happened yesterday, I admit.
I thought we moved past that.
We did, but I take a deep breath. I fear something's wrong with me, Caleb, I confess. It's not the first time this has happened, these hallucinations.
What do you mean?
He turns to me, frowning. Ever since I came here, weird things have been happening around me, and I don't know if they're all in my mind or... I bite my lip in apprehension. But everyone saw how Leo Pierce died, and that wasn't normal. I just no longer know what is real and what is not.
Darcy.
My name on his lips is like a tender caress. Slowing the car down, he stops it by the side of the road so he can give me his full attention.
There's nothing wrong with you.
He takes my hand in his, massaging my pulse point with his thumb.
You're in a new place, and people have behaved horribly towards you. It's normal to be a little stressed.
You think it's stress? I ask in a whisper.
I think you're overwhelmed. Maybe Leo's death affected you more than you realized?
He offers, a tight smile on his face. How could someone just burst into flames? I mumble, the memory from the day before still fresh in my mind. But more than anything, why aren't people more concerned about it? I ask the question that had plagued me from the beginning. Aside from a few insults from the Pierces, no one had seemed too surprised, not only at his sudden resurrection, but also the manner of his subsequent death. No one had tried to step in to help either, merely watching his death from the sidelines, as if it was indeed a regular occurrence. Then there were those interactions at the diner. They had been bawdy and tawdry in the beginning, but the moment I hinted at actually being a witch, everyone had been terrified.
Fairydale people aren't strangers to odd deaths, just as they aren't strangers to the more occult ways of life.
What do you mean? I frown.
It's not something I can explain. It's something you'll have to witness for yourself.
Well, I'm not sure I want to, I grumble, already dreading the 2 months I'd promised to stay.
You should never worry about anything while you're here, Darcy, darling.
He murmurs.
There may be forces beyond our understanding. There may be black and white, dark and light, evil and good. There may be opposites, but you'll forever be safe in the gray.
I wet my lips, regarding him intently as I try to decipher his words. Are you saying there is something evil in this town? His lip curls up in a smug smile.
Is there?
He muses knowingly.
If there is, I'll make sure it never touches you.
He winks at me playfully, and a blush suffuses my cheeks.
Now let's get you some food. I wouldn't be much of a boyfriend if I let my darling go hungry, would I?
Hey, I jab my elbow in his side. Who said you're my boyfriend? I haven't agreed to anything. I fight the smile on my lips.
But you will, Darcy, darling.
He chuckles as he starts the engine.
You will.
The journey to the town square is filled with teasing and laughter, and I slowly let my guard down, forgetting my previous reservations about Caleb. He's handsome, charming, and has a silver tongue, and though I feel myself succumbing deeper and deeper under his spell, I don't forget the fact that he never answered my initial question about Leo's death or its reception. Just how odd are the deaths in Fairydale? When we get to the square, we slow down as we notice a crowd of people in front of the Fairydale Monument. What's happening? I ask as I try to get a better view. He shrugs.
We can take a look. The diner's in that direction anyway.
Parking the car a distance away, he comes to my side to open my door as he takes my hand in his. Not for the first time, a wave of pure electricity travels down my back from the touch of his skin on mine. He feels it, too, going by the way his gaze flickers as he looks me in the eye. For a moment, neither speaks as his fingers curl around my hand before sliding towards my wrist, holding lightly and bringing it to his mouth. Still holding me captive with his gaze, he slowly, ever so slowly, parts his lips over my pulse point, giving me a short but sensuous kiss. I am so attuned to his every move that the prolonged contact of his lips on top of my skin is making me pant, my breath coming out in short, shallow spurts, my brain disconnecting from reality. Yet, just as I find myself caught in his spell, I'm once more startled by a change in scenery. It only lasts for a second, but everything decays around us, turning black and bleak. Darkness suffuses my field of view, the color of his eyes morphing before my very gaze. From the previous impenetrable black, they turn a phosphorescent blue before red. Blood bleeds out of them. I blink, and everything is back to normal. His lips are still on my flesh, just as his gaze dips to my mouth, making me curious what it would feel like if... Heat travels up my cheeks, and I eventually avert my eyes, but not before I notice the look of pure hunger that overtakes his features.
Shall we?
He arranges my hand in the crook of his elbow as he leads me towards the crowd. I strain a smile, hoping to look unaffected when I'm anything but... Never in my life have I felt so conflicted about something, and it's more than just me feeling out of my element under male attention. It's the pure fact that Caleb Hale is like a drug to my senses, tantalizing and dazzling me until I lose track of everything around me. And if I give in, if I embrace this newly found addiction, I fear I might never be the same. My thoughts are interrupted by the spectacle surrounding the monument. People are yelling and cursing, their voices getting louder and louder until it's hard to ignore the words tossed around. Dead, murder, killer. Caleb frowns, and taking my hand, he tugs me closer to his side.
Stay close to me,
he whispers. A few more steps, and we have a front row seat to the carnage. My hand flies to my mouth as a gasp escapes me. The monument, an angel with spread wings, is fully coated in blood. Blood that's dripping from the three people defiled on top of the statue. But the worst, I recognize each and every one of them. Caleb, what the hell is this? I ask in a tremulous voice.
You shouldn't look,
he says, pursing his lips and moving in an attempt to shield me. No, don't! I stop him. I know them. All three. I barely managed to get the words out. The first one is Vicky. Her organs have been emptied from her chest cavity, and instead she's been stuffed with newspaper clippings, all of them containing unfavorable terms. Crook, thief, adulteress. Every clipping is depicting one sin she's allegedly guilty of. I swallow, the sight as pitiful as it is horrifying. Her face is forever frozen in pain. Her face is forever frozen in pain. Her mouth open, her eyes wide, and I wonder if the killer tortured her before killing her. For all her nasty behavior towards me, I would have never wished something like this upon anyone. Yet, it gets worse. The next man is stuck on the angel wing, the stone passing right through his gut. I know him, too. I recognize him as the man who'd pinched my bottom at the diner the day before. But if these two had been coincidences, both residents of Fairydale, the third one can't possibly be. He's at the feet of the angel, his head in his lap after a very clean decapitation. Yet I remember his features perfectly. The dirty hair and bloodshot eyes. He's the man who stole my luggage at the Ipswich station. Despite not wanting to let my mind wander to the worst scenario, it's simply impossible. These three people all have something in common, and that's me. The other townsfolk are all crossing themselves and saying the Hail Mary, with some brave ones stepping forward to help the sheriff remove the bodies from the statue. They successfully do so with Vicky's body and the second man, but when they reach the third, they stop for a moment as they don't recognize him, and since he's not a local, they set about searching his pockets for any form of identification.
"What's that?"
one of the men asks as something falls out of his front pocket.
"It's a notebook."
The sheriff frowns, picking it up. The moment it's in his hands, I know exactly what it is. My journal.
"Darcy O'Sullivan."
He reads the name on the first page. I freeze. Caleb's hold tightens on me, as he can undoubtedly recognize what will follow. "Isn't that the new girl in town?"
"Pierce is a legitimate girl. Fuck me, it's the girl that made him catch fire."
Another exclaims.
"She didn't do it!"
someone yelled, while another man said I did.
"You need to question her, Sheriff. We need to leave."
Caleb whispers in my ear, slowly moving me away from the crowd in an effort to be undetected. The voices get louder and louder until suddenly they stop.
"That's her!"
a man yells, and turning, I note they're all pointing their fingers at me.
"Quickly! Stop her!"
They all scream in a chorus, hurrying to catch up with us. Caleb is right ahead of them as he pulls me into his arms, running with me at full speed. His physical condition is flawless, and it only takes a few seconds to reach the car. Swinging the door open, he lowers me inside while he dashes to the other side and gets into the driver's seat.
"Hold on, darling. We're about to go at full speed."
He starts the engine, swiftly changing gears and driving the car in the opposite direction as a mob of people runs towards us. My entire body is shaking at this point, both from the shock of seeing the slaughtered bodies and from the reactions of the people, all blaming me. Yet despite knowing I had nothing to do with it, not personally in any event, I can't help but feel that they all died because of me. Somehow, I am the link. But how? As we pass by the monument again, I'm struck by something else. Right next to the bodies is the same old man I'd seen at the funeral, the one who'd been conversing with Vicky and Mr. Vaughn. And despite their previous chummy interaction, he's sitting by the body with complete disinterest. He's holding a cane in his right hand, and something on top of the handle shines bright in the sunlight, almost blinding me in the process. When I finally manage to blink away the painful light, my eyes meet his. His mouth curves upwards in a smug expression, his lips moving slowly as he's miming a word. Soon, I spell out the word. What the hell is that supposed to mean? Chapter 8. By the time Caleb pulls up to Astor Place, I'm still shaken from what happened. So much so that I only want to close myself in my bedroom, away from everyone around me. Yet more than anything, I resent the fact that I agreed to remain in Fairydale. Why in God's name did I have to accept the clause? Because you're petty, and because it's $1 million. The pettiness is technically out the window since Vicky is no longer a contender. But it's $1 million. $1 million. What fool would give that up? And for 2 months of living in this godforsaken place. Although this morning I would have said that I could bear to stay 2 months, now I'm not sure anymore. Odd deaths? Just how many odd deaths can be in a small town? Add to that the many unusual things that have been happening around me, and I'm either truly losing my mind, or there is something really off about Fairydale. What had Caleb said? That the town is acquainted with the occult? A shiver goes down my back at the thought. Yet I can't not consider the possibility. Not anymore.
I don't feel comfortable leaving you here, Darcy. You should come stay with us.
Caleb says as he helps me out of the car. I shake my head. I told you I won't. I'll be fine here. If the sheriff calls on me for a statement, then I will go. But I didn't do anything, so why would I hide?
I'm not saying you did anything. I know you didn't. But they don't. You saw how those people reacted.
I'm aware. But that doesn't mean I have to hide like I'm guilty. I sigh.
Let me stay over at least,
he suggests, and my brows shoot up in surprise. You know I can't do that, I tell him softly, fighting the blush going up my cheeks. It wouldn't be proper, and I don't want to feed the gossips even more. I have to stay here for 2 more months. He purses his lips, clearly not pleased with my decision.
I'll sleep in another bedroom,
he probes further. But I remain firm in my decision. I'm already embarrassed that you had to take care of me last night. That you... I pause, undoubtedly red from head to toe. That you undressed me, I add on a whisper. A knowing smirk flashes across his face.
If it makes you feel better about that, Darcy, darling.
He says as he takes a step forward, his hand slowly trailing down my face.
I tried to preserve your modesty.
You did? I blink in surprise. He nods slowly, his lips tugging up.
I did my best to not make you uncomfortable.
He whispers as he leans forward.
Although I have to admit, the temptation was agonizing.
Well, I clear my throat, my entire body humming with awareness. I'm glad you were so circumspect, I say as I swallow hard.
For now,
he murmurs, wickedly winking at me. What? I squeak.
You make it very hard for me to be a gentleman, Darcy, but that's what you want, do you not? A proper, virtuous, boring gentleman.
Doesn't everyone want that? I counter in a soft voice, one that doesn't seem convincing even to my ears.
That's what you think you want, darling.
He drawls, his voice a combination of decadence wrapped in seduction.
But I know what you need.
My pulse accelerates from his nearness and intense perusal. And what is that? I ask slowly, fighting to keep my voice unaffected.
You need a bad man, not a gentleman.
He rasps, his gaze connects with mine.
You need corruption and sin, Darcy, darling. You need someone to worship your innocence and despoil it at the same time.
I stare at him, unable to find a proper reply. Not when, despite the alarm bells sounding in my head, My body is aflame at his nearness, growing hotter with every spoken word, every threat that sounds like a slow seduction. Despoil? You make it sound so... violent. I laugh nervously. We're not in the Middle Ages anymore. I mumble quietly.
No. Pity we're not.
He replies in a serious tone. Suddenly, he leans in, his lips brushing against my earlobe.
Violence and sex are inevitably interlinked. They have the same urgency, the same impetus to drive forward.
He murmurs softly.
The same desire to plunder and possess.
I wouldn't know. I gulp, feeling myself in entirely foreign territory.
But you will,
he says as he draws back. I expect to see amusement in his features at making me flustered, but instead, all I see is a frightening intensity that leaves me breathless and wanting.
Good night, Darcy, darling. Dream of me.
He brings my hand to his lips, kissing it like he did before, all the while not taking his eyes off me. His lips curl up when he senses my erratic pulse, but he doesn't comment further. He simply urges me on, getting in his car only when I'm inside the house with the locks in place. Just like the first day, I hurry to my bedroom window, pulling the curtain aside and watching his car disappear up the hill. My heart is still beating loudly in my chest, and as I bring my hands to my cheeks, it's to feel them hot to the touch. Drat it, I mumble, heading to the bathroom to splash myself with some cold water. Yet, as I turn the faucet off, I hear a very familiar sound.
Meow.
Following the meows, I come face to face with Mr. Meow, right in my house. He's on my kitchen table, casually licking his paw and giving me a satisfied look. How did you get here? I ask, startled to find him here.
Meow.
He comes closer, nuzzling his cheeks against my waist. It's then that I remember the first time I'd seen him had been by the old church. Maybe that's the area he frequents since he doesn't seem to have an owner. But what was he doing around the cabin then? That's at the outskirts of Fairydale, quite a distance from here. My thoughts are a whirlpool of confusion, but as I gaze into his big eyes, I can't find it in me to toss him out. Didn't I want to keep him before? He must be pretty smart since he found me first. My lips tug up in a smile as I grab him, tugging him to my chest. Well, it's good that you're here, Mr. Meow. I'm going to feed you and take care of you from now on, I tell him gently as I go to the cupboards, removing a few cans of food and heating them up. Some I choose specifically for him, and some for myself since I didn't get to eat earlier. When the food is ready, I go against dining etiquette and allow Mr. Meow to eat at the table with me. In fact, I'm surprised by how well-behaved he is. He doesn't even try to sneak his snout into my plate, keeping strictly to his own serving. That's a good boy, aren't you? I smile as I pat him on the patch of white fur. Turning, he licks his lips, giving me a loud meow to suggest that he enjoys that gesture. So I repeat it. What I expected to be a lonely meal turns into quite an animated one. Maybe I can't exactly understand what Mr. Meow is saying to me, but his body language is quite clear. He leans into me when he likes something and shies away from my touch when he doesn't. He's smart like that. When we're both done, I clean the plates and place them up to dry. Then I take him in my arms and head upstairs to the bedroom. Taking some paper and a pencil from my purse, I make a list of things I must do now that I'm going to spend the next 2 months in Fairydale. The first thing is to find a telephone and call the school, Allison, and the nuns. I wouldn't want them to worry about me. I doubt the school will want to keep me with such an extended vacation, and if they decide to let me go, then I will agree with their decision. For God's sake, it's $1 million. At the end of it all, I don't even know what I'll do with that type of money. Maybe buy a house and settle somewhere, get a part-time job and invest the rest? The choices are infinite. One thing is for sure, though. I'll need to be careful with the money. I've seen cases where people lost the money as easily as they got it. After I've made a to-do list, I chat a little with Mr. Meow, though he can only meow his reply. And as nightfall is upon us, I start preparing for bed. I carefully take off my bandage, inspecting my wound. To my surprise, I don't see any of the skin abrasions the doctor had described. In fact, as I stare at the mirror, I have to wonder if the light isn't faulty, because I can't see anything. My skin is as unblemished as it was before. Frowning, I take my dress off, inspecting the other places on my body, finding them equally as pristine. No wonder my ribcage had stopped hurting after some time. As I look at it now, I can't find any bruise, not one discoloration. Even the gash on my thigh is gone, the skin absolutely flawless. What? I mutter to myself. Was it all in my head? But it can't be. Caleb himself saw the injuries, and Dr. Bailey treated my head wound. He inspected and dressed it. That was only hours ago. How in God's name are all my injuries gone now? Thinking a relaxing bath would help, I run some hot water and get in the tub to soak my body. Yet it's all in vain. My muscles are still tense, my mind rattled by all the events that had happened to this point. I have absolutely no injuries, and this morning my body was teeming with gashes, scratches, and bruises. Maybe it wouldn't have been so worrisome if it had been an isolated incident. Though let's face it, it's absolutely unusual. But combined with everything that's been happening, I can't help but feel I'm missing something. Closing my eyes, I take a deep breath as I go back to the beginning in an attempt to understand what's happening. The first red flag is that I'd been called to Fairydale under the assumption that my biological father was dead, but he was only pretending. No matter how much I think of it, it has to have been a premeditated act. The question is why. Then there are the sadistic murders. First Mr. Pierce, then Vicky and the two men. I'd already established that I was the link, but not why. And the answer comes easily. All of them, at one point or another, had tried to harm me. Mr. Pierce had threatened me, as had Vicky, on top of attacking me. One of the men had stolen my luggage while the other had leered at me and pinched my bottom. All four of them had done something against me. But if it's clearly not me who is doing this in some twisted game of revenge, then someone out there is. Who? The only person I know in Fairydale that I am on good terms with is Caleb, and he had been with me at the medic's office. But what about before? I blink, the thought suddenly crossing my mind. There's no telling for how long those bodies were hung there. Caleb had arrived at the Pierce house right after the will reading, but where had he been before that? Suddenly, I'm scared to entertain that thought. Surely he's not capable of something that heinous. But Mr. Vaughn had said he'd been in the war, and I'm certain he'd had to do things there. There is also the matter of yesterday, or what I remember as yesterday. Despite him being on his best behavior today, playful, flirty, and seemingly having my best interests at heart, I can't stop thinking about the other side of him, the one he says was only a product of my imagination. But how could I possibly imagine him behaving in such a manner? How could I entertain the thought that a man could treat me like that? Something doesn't fit. Yes, he appeals to me on a deeper level, but he also scares me all the same. Mr. Meow pushes the bathroom door open with his head, sneaking inside and coming to the edge of the tub. Do you want a bath as well? I smile, banishing all doubts. Leaning over the tub, I grab Mr. Meow and bring him inside, wetting him just a little before he releases a startled meow and jumps on me. Luckily, his claws are sheathed, so he doesn't end up hurting me. He's just holding on to my neck with his little paws, his body fitted to my torso. A little water won't harm you, I chuckle. A few moments in his presence, and I already feel invigorated. Bit by bit, I manage to submerge him in the water, cleaning him and rubbing his belly as he likes it. When the water grows cold, I take him in my arms and we both get out. I dry him first before I dry myself and put on my nightgown. It's not too late, but I'm exhausted, I murmur as I lay a kiss on his forehead. Shall we go to sleep? With a meow of confirmation, I take him with me to bed, snuggling with him as I drift into sleep. June, 1790, Essex, Great Britain. You just got out of mourning, Mama. We shouldn't go to a house party and pretend everything is all right. I try to convince my mother as our carriage rattles into the majestic estate of the Duke of Essex. It's not proper.
After all the ignominies your late father made me suffer over the years, this is not in the least improper, dear. I'm going to that house party, and I'm going to have fun for once without looking over my shoulder. It's already been a year, and considering Havisham's reputation, no one will blame me.
She huffs, her nose in the air, snapping her fan at me and thereby closing this discussion. I release a weary sigh as I burrow myself in the velvet cushion of the carriage. After my father's sudden death, we've had to forego the London season due to mourning, and though the requisite period has technically passed, I still think it's too early to show our faces in society, particularly after the nasty rumours that my mother had a hand in my father's death. My older sister's already married and settled in her own home, so now it's only my mother, my brother, and me. And with my mother's tyrannical bent, even though the title came down to my brother, she is in charge of everything.
And here we are, our new chance at life.
My mother breathes out in awe as the opulent estate comes into view. Maybe yours, I grumble under my breath. It's not that I don't love my mother. I do. She's been my champion growing up, trying to make everyone see past my eccentricities and accept me for who I was. But she's also an extremely strong-willed woman who is used to getting her own way. Even during her marriage with my father, though she abhorred the public humiliation, she was happy to be left alone to her devices as the mistress of the manor. She took her duties seriously and made Havisham the most profitable it had ever been. The staff liked her, the villagers loved her, and she was seen as something of a fairy godmother to all her acquaintances.
Elizabeth,
she gasps, horrified.
This is your true chance at making a proper match, not the ones your father would have chosen for you.
She chides.
He only cared about his own interests, not your well-being. But don't worry, with me by your side, I'll make sure you have only the best suitors.
She nods to herself, pleased with her reasoning. I force a smile, barely stifling the urge to roll my eyes at her. She's done this with my sister, and though she'd matched her with a wealthy viscount, I doubt my sister's very happy. At least that is the impression I get every time I see her, and she complains to my mother that her husband is still visiting her bed despite having given him two sons. My mother, of course, had told her to listen to her husband and given her some type of potion to make the entire situation more bearable. I'd eavesdropped on their conversation, of course, since Mother would never allow me to know things that pertain to married life yet. Ironic, considering I will experience it at some point, too. Yet, seeing the wretched state of my sister doesn't give me a lot of confidence in what mothers consider a good and proper match. She might have my interests at heart, but ultimately, she holds her own even closer to her heart. The carriage draws to a halt, and when our door is opened, my mother is the first to get out, with me next.
Can you believe we'll be here for the next fortnight? No more exile, Elizabeth.
She tips her chin up, her eyes closed as an expression of pure happiness descends upon her face. Of course, Mother. I nod, going along with her. For her it might be a fortnight of fun, but for me it will be one of wasting my time in the nursery. Father died right as I was about to make my debut, and we entered mourning immediately after. As such, I have not made my official entrance into society, and though I am allowed to attend the daytime events, the same cannot be said about the soirees or the balls that are the highlight of the Duke of Essex's house parties. We're soon greeted by the hosts before we're led to our rooms. Oddly enough, we're separated, my mother having a room in the east wing, while I am in the west. Mary trails behind me as we head to the room. One of the footmen walking alongside her sees carrying my luggage. Leaving the bags in the room, Mary tips the man as she shoos him out of the room. "Come on, he's probably ill from the confines of the trunk," I say frantically as I take one of the smaller bags, laying it flat on the floor as I unlock it. Not a second later, and Mr. Meow makes his appearance, thrusting his head forward just as he emits a loud meow when he sees me. "I'm so sorry, Mr. Meow. You know how Mama gets when she sees you." How I've managed to hide him for close to a year, I don't know. Since finding him in the backyard, I couldn't find it in me to part with him, so I'd stolen him into my room, giving him food and taking care of his needs. In the time we've spent together, he's become my greatest friend, always there for me, always ready to give me an understanding meow or a comforting pat. Maybe our languages are not compatible, but I feel as though we understand each other better than if we spoke words. He jumps on me, thoroughly licking my face, and I know he's not upset about being confined in such a small place. "I have a treat for you," I whisper, as I remove a small piece of food from the inside of my dress, holding it to Mr. Meow's face. His eyes go wide before he leans forward, woofing the piece of ham in one go. "I'll steal more from the kitchens for you," I promise him, finally putting him down. In the same trunk, I'd packed him a small cushion on which he can sleep. Although he always ends up in bed with me, as well as a necklace I'd had custom made for him. Removing the necklace from the silk pouch, I'm once more reminded I'd used all my pin money to commission the engraving. Yet, as I place it around his neck, I can't find it in me to regret it. A white leather strap, to complement his patch of white hair, goes around his neck, with a small silver pendant hanging from it, which has an engraving on it, Lizzie's Mr. Meow. A wide grin pulls at my lips as I look at him. "Oh my, but aren't you dashing now, Mr. Meow?" I ask playfully. Like the smart cat he is, he walks straight to the wall-sized mirror on the other side of the room, stopping to admire his reflection. Until Mr. Meow, I'd never realized that cats can recognize their own reflection, much less look for it of their own volition. It all proves that my Mr. Meow is no ordinary cat. "You like it, don't you?" I move to his side, dropping to my haunches in front of the mirror. I swear I detect a nod before he jumps up at me, giving me another lick. "You're officially mine," I tell him proudly, taking him in my arms and patting him on the head. For the next few hours, I get ready to meet the guests, taking a bath and dressing up to perfection as Mother instructed. Though she hasn't specifically said so to me, I'm aware that this house party will be a perfect opportunity for her to scout a potential husband for me. In fact, if she manages to marry me off before I'm due for my season, she won't have to act the matronly chaperone, and she can go on her merry way and do things as a widow that she was never permitted to do while married. Despite knowing her wishes fully well, I can't get on board with her idea. I am aware I must at one point get married, but how can I when I am still hung up on one person? Aemon Dartan. It's been more than a year since I last saw him, and though I doubt I'll ever see him again, I can't help the way my heart skips a beat as I remember his sharp features, or his naturally white hair. It hadn't been only his looks that had forever seared themselves in my heart. It had been his act of kindness, and the way he'd tended to me after a vicious attack. He's been kind, sweet, and ever so gentle. Despite the fact that he disavowed the term as applying to his person, he'd shown me kindness and consideration, More so than the distinguished gentlemen of the ton who only see me as a brood mare. But then there was his appellation for me. Lizzie Mine. I still dream about it, and sometimes in the silence of the night I could swear I hear him whisper that in my ear. A year has passed, and he is still always on my mind.
There you go, my lady.
Mary's voice startles me from my thoughts. I give her a nod as I examine myself in the mirror. She'd done my hair in a simple style with a few curls down my side. Rising from my chair, I pat my hands down my gown, smoothing out the wrinkles before I ultimately don my gloves. If there is one thing I am happy about for having missed my debut the year before, it's the change in fashion. No longer the big hoops, heavy wigs, and ostentatious styles of dress. Now everything is minimalistic, simple but elegant. It certainly aids movement more than the odious contraptions I was supposed to wear before. Thank you, Mary. Now wish me luck. I smile at her before I'm out the door. A servant soon intercepts me, leading me to the drawing room where I'm supposed to meet my mother and Her Grace, the host. It is my understanding that Her Grace has decided some outdoor games would be the best way to get everyone familiar with each other, though I doubt the option is still on the table, considering the gathering of clouds I spot out the window.
There she is.
Fiona, my mother, rises to come greet me. Placing her arm around my back, she pushes me forward.
Please allow me to introduce you to my daughter, Lady Elizabeth Montford,
she adds in a buoyant tone, going around the room and doing the introductions with everyone present. Pleased to meet you, Your Grace. I curtsy to the Duchess before I do my best to politely interact with everyone. It's only after a lengthy series of inane small talk that I am allowed to take a seat.
There's only one person missing, the Duchess suddenly says.
Oh, there he is, and right on time. She brings her hands together in a clap just as thunder resounds in the sky. Good thing we have the Dowager Duchess, she adds lightly. At her age, she can feel the storm brewing in her bones. She laughs, prompting everyone else to do so as well. Straining a smile, I look around the room until my eyes suddenly meet his.
This is Aymon d'Autun, Marquis d'Ombre, the Duchess starts. A relative of my husband's. He has decided to make England his home permanently after what happened in France last year.
Good afternoon.
He nods to everyone.
Of course I couldn't stay.
He flashes the Duchess a smile.
I predict it's going to get quite nasty. Better run while I can.
He winks at her. The Duchess blushes profusely, and I can't help but feel a stab of jealousy in my gut. What follows next are the same inane introductions as before, and when it's my turn, I give him a small smile and curtsy.
Pleased to meet you, Lady Elizabeth.
He drawls, his voice making the hairs on my body stand to attention. Yet I can't tell whether he recognizes me or not. No, what I'm feeling is purely a result of his presence and of his utterly ethereal looks. Just as I remember him, his long white hair, currently tied to his back. His eyes are the lightest blue I've ever seen, and at times I get the impression they are glowing in unnatural light that makes him seem as otherworldly as I remember. Sadly, I'm not the only one noticing this. Every woman in the room, married, unmarried, or widowed, nearly swoons when he directs his attention to them. Already, 1 second in his presence, and I know everyone is scheming on how to get him to the altar if he's not already married. My eyes widen at that thought, but just as if he could read my mind, Aemon brings his hand to his temple, showcasing an empty ring finger. I swallow uncomfortably at the glee that erupts in my chest when I realize he is unattached. When the storm shows no sign of abating, the Duchess declares we must all gather for tea and cakes. No sooner does she place the order than a sea of servants enters the room with a variety of cakes, sandwiches, and most importantly, tea. It becomes immediately apparent that the Duchess has thought about everything, with several spare plans to use in case the former fails. As the staff arranges the mini buffet around the room, everyone starts to mingle and interact with one another. Seeing that my mother is involved in quite an animated conversation with the general, I leave her side, going to peruse the selection of food.
Are you a fan of sweet or savory, Lady Elizabeth?
I don't have to look to know who is speaking to me, my heart already jumping in my chest from his deep rumble. Both, I answer in a soft voice. I find that they complement each other. Wouldn't you say so, my lord? Coming closer than is proper, his breath is on my cheek as he whispers.
Have you missed me, Lizzie mine?
The words have their intended effect on me as I become short of breath and rather dizzy, but I cannot allow him to see that. Why ever should I miss you, my lord? I half turn, giving him a small smile. We don't have that type of acquaintance where I'm allowed to miss you, do we? I murmur. His mouth is set in a grim line as he regards me mutinously, clearly not pleased with my words.
Perchance I haven't proven that to you, and I accept it as my fault.
Proven what, my lord? You'll have to be more clear. I smile.
That you're mine, Lady Elizabeth.
He adds with a mischievous smile.
But I'm sure I'll enjoy proving it to you.
I turn from him. You speak pretty words to a lady you've only met once before. How am I to know this is not your modus operandi? That you're not charming every lady you meet the same way?
You wound me, Lady Elizabeth.
He brings his hand to his heart.
Alas, you would be wrong to make such an assumption.
He says in a playful voice before dipping his head lower, his mouth close to my ear as he continues.
There is only one woman I wish to claim, Lizzie mine. Past, present, future, and for an eternity to come.
Why now? Why seek me out after so long? I demand in a whisper, unable to hide the disappointment in my voice.
It wasn't my intention to do that.
He sighs.
Things have kept me away. Abroad.
He clarifies, moving closer.
I would have come sooner for you, had I been able to.
Deep down, all I want is to believe him, even realizing how foolish it is to yearn for someone as much as I have him. I cannot stop myself. One meeting and he imprinted himself on me. You made no promises. I shrug, the words burning on my tongue.
The blood I spilled for you was promise enough,
he murmurs.
The blood I would spill again and again, just to keep you safe, happy, mine.
I swallow hard, his voice sending shivers down my back just as his hand accidentally brushes against my gloved one. Despite the lack of skin-to-skin contact, the surge of electricity is immediate, so much so that I can't help but turn to look at him, my eyes on his, my breath coming out in tandem with his. For a moment, one short moment, everything stills. There's no one else in the room but he and I, lost in each other's gazes and the timelessness of time. The air hums with energy, the storm raging outside only serving to emphasize the precarious storm taking shape within my breast. He's close. Yet he's so far away, and though I know I shouldn't, all I want is to reach out. Elizabeth! The spell is broken as my mother reaches my side, giving Eamon a deadly look before all but dragging me away from the buffet table. Don't talk to him again, she orders me. I don't want to see you ever talk to him again. My eyes widen with shock at her vehemence. I've never seen her act like this with anyone before. Why? I frown. He's a friend of Her Grace's. He's bad news, Elizabeth. He's the worst news, and I prohibit you from talking to him again. She grits her teeth,
and as she glances back at where Eamon is sitting, casually looking at me with unabashed hunger, my mother becomes even more erratic.
Go to your room. Don't come out tomorrow either. I'll arrange something with Her Grace.
She drones on, but I easily find myself gazing back at Eamon and his knowing smile. Winking at me, he turns to leave the room. True to his word, he doesn't engage with anyone else.
Are you listening, Elizabeth?
My mother snaps. Of course. I nod. You said not to talk to him again.
Exactly. It's for your own good, dear. He's not for you.
She gives me a tight smile before she sends me back to my room. Crossing the corridor to my room, I barely realize when a door to my right opens, a hand curling around my wrist and tugging me inside. I'm about to scream when I come face to face with Eamon. What?
There's a ball 2 nights from now.
He whispers, and in this position, I have to crane my neck to look at him.
Come.
I can't. I sigh. I'm not allowed, and my mother would never let me. I explain, disappointed at the missed opportunity. Despite being a little wary of Eamon due to his previous disappearance and my mother's warning, I can't ignore this want inside my chest, this inexplicable desire to be near him, always with him. For a year, he has persisted in my thoughts, with just one interaction irrevocably claiming my heart, though I am reluctant to admit as much. I want to dance with him, touch him, feel his breath on top of my skin, and hear his voice rumble in my ear. I just want.
And you'll have it, Lizzie mine. You'll have all of it.
He says, his words cryptic.
It will be a masquerade. I've persuaded the Duchess to throw one, and that means you will be able to attend, and no one shall be the wiser.
But how? I don't have anything to wear, and...
You will. I've sent for a package to be delivered to your room. In it you shall find everything you might need.
He smiles, his eyes roving over my face as if it's been eons since he's last seen me. Why? I ask softly. Why me? Why are you doing this? Why now? His smile deepens.
Precisely because you're you, and because that makes you mine.
I barely get to process his words, and I'm back in the corridor, moving towards my room. Yet despite all the confusion, there's a giddiness that overtakes me as I'm finally alone in the confines of my room. Eamon Dartan is back. Although I'd suspected my mother had simply warned me off Eamon because he is reputed to be quite the rogue, I'm surprised to see how vehement she is that I stay away from him. Barely one day has passed since she issued the first warning, and now she's back to reiterate it, this time calling me to her chambers for an important discussion. I don't understand you, Mama. I'm sure the Marquis would have no interest in me.
I saw how he was looking at you,
she hisses.
You don't know him, or his kind, my dear child.
She sighs when she sees my perplexed expression.
All my life I've tried to protect you and your siblings from this side of the world.
I shake my head. What side of the world? I frown, not understanding her. She waves her hand, dismissing the topic.
It's not important now, but I need you to keep your distance from that man. This is for your own good, dear.
But how? If you don't tell me, then I won't know how to protect myself.
Come here,
she says, tugging me into her arms and giving me a heartfelt hug.
You're special, Elizabeth, more so than you'll ever know. And because of that, I must do everything in my power to protect you. Do you understand me?
I nod slowly.
Promise me you won't seek him out.
She whispers against my hair. I promise, I reply, the lie making me physically ill.
My mother has never been so decisive about something, and though the logical part of me knows I should heed her warning, the fickle, romantic side of me has already decided I will not. Not when Aemon isn't just the reprehensible rogue my mother portrays him to be. He is my savior, the man who's haunted my dreams, during the night and daytime. As such, when the night of the masquerade arrives, I proceed with my plan.
Are you sure, my lady?
Mary asks as she regards me with worry in her eyes. You can retire, Mary. I just have a slight headache. It should be fine once I go to sleep, I tell her, feigning a tired voice.
If at any point during the night you feel ill, please call on me and I'll fetch the physician.
Of course. Good night, Mary. She lingers for a moment longer before she sighs and leaves the room. I wait a few more minutes and I jump out of bed. Lowering myself to my knees, I grab onto the box I'd hidden under the bed, sliding it towards me. My lips tremble with excitement as I take the top off, revealing a glamorous black dress accompanied by a simple lace mask featuring a black feather. I first put on the dress, marveling at how easy it is to do it by myself. In fact, I have to wonder if Aemon took that into consideration when he picked it. As soon as that thought arises, it dawns on me that he must have planned this for far longer than he let on. Otherwise, how would he have had a dress on such short notice, and one that seems to have been made for me, too? Despite the fact that my first instinct should be to be suspicious, I can't help but feel flattered. The fact that he'd thought of this in advance must mean that his words were true. He was biding his time. A blush appears on my cheeks. It seems that our fateful meeting a year ago hadn't been one-sided. Maybe he had been equally affected by the moment, equally fascinated by me as I'd been by him. Fanning myself, I realize I need to get to work on my hair if I am to make it to the party on time. It always happens that the moment I think of him I lose track of time, just as I lose myself in the maze that is my imagination of him. Given that Mary isn't here tonight, I have to do my hair myself, so I go for the simplest style. I braid a few strands while leaving the rest of my hair unbound down my back, a scandalous style for a debutante, but an accepted one for a more seasoned lady. And since no one shall know my identity tonight, I can be a little more risque. When my hair is done, I put on the mask, carefully securing it in place with pins. And the last step, rouge. Since I'm about to be quite scandalous, what could be more so than red lips? Applying some red tint to my lips, I can't help but admire myself in the mirror and imagine what Aemon will think when he sees me. The black of the mask accentuates the blue of my eyes, while the red pops against my pale skin and black hair. I'm not immediately recognizable, but if you looked closely enough, you could tell it was me by my eye color alone. But that is easily remedied. I will just not interact with anyone but Aemon. When I'm done, I put my slippers on, and I'm out of the room, walking briskly towards the stairs to avoid detection. The music from the orchestra resounds through the entire house, the melody lulling me closer, just as a sigh escapes my lips. Excitement thrums through my veins, and for some reason, I know this night will irrevocably change my life. Like a seed planted in fertile soil, this, too, feels like the beginning of something. Once I enter the ballroom, it's quite easy to get lost in the throng of people, but quite hard to find Aemon. My first inclination is to look for his white hair, but there are many men wearing wigs, making it hard to differentiate among them. Grabbing a champagne flute, I let my gaze roam about the room, surprised at some of the costume choices. Some had resorted to extravagance, their costumes embodying historical or mythological figures. I think I spot Cleopatra, an Aphrodite, a gladiator, and a Roman emperor. Most people, however, had simply opted for simple masks and a change of hairstyle, not wanting to be entirely unrecognizable. A low hum of energy travels down my back.
Looking for someone?
I feel him before I hear him, his body heat surrounding mine, his presence never failing to make every inch of my skin radiate with tension. Maybe, I reply saucily, suddenly turning. My eyes widen as I take him in. His hair has been dyed black, just like the mask that's hiding his perfectly sculpted features. Like me, he's dressed entirely in black, his light eyes the only contrast.
You look spectacular, as always.
He takes my hand in his, laying a kiss on my gloved knuckles. My pulse accelerates, and I find myself tongue-tied before him. If for the past year I'd kept imagining thousands of scenarios in which we would meet again, and what I would say to him if that happened, now that he is here, in flesh and bone, I do not know what to say. What do I know about flirting, or being charming, or witty when I've rarely had the chance to interact with anyone, let alone men?
You don't have to say anything witty to have my full attention, Lizzie mine.
He murmurs against my hand, his warm breath penetrating the lacy glove and meeting my naked skin.
You only have to exist, and you're all I see.
He continues, coming closer and tucking a strand of hair behind my ear. His proximity makes me feel lightheaded, though maybe that's the champagne, too.
Let's dance,
he suddenly suggests, and without waiting for my reply, he whirls me towards the dance floor. Seeing him against the sea of people, I can admit to myself that there's nothing inconspicuous about his height and build. Even without his signature white hair, I would have been able to find him. I'll always find him.
And I you,
he says, his eyes flickering with intensity. Hmm? I blink.
Wherever you are, wherever you go.
He pauses as his gaze pins me to the spot.
Whoever you are, I will find you. That is my promise to you. Always.
My lips tug in a smile as a blush creeps up my cheeks. Can he be more charming? Following the cue of the music, he spins me in the middle of the dance floor, the physical exertion making my heart pound and my cheeks flush. Yet it's the little touches that set me more aflame than anything. The small brush of his chest against mine, the feel of his big hands swallowing mine, or the way our bodies seemingly fit together, like they'd been cut from the same mold. A giggle escapes me when the music changes to a brisk tune, and he leads me into another dance, twirling me continuously. Our eyes connect, our lips moving in tandem as a smile appears on both our faces. He's laughing too, enjoying the moment as much as I am. Despite the intensity I've come to expect from him, there's a levity to his expression, a blithe smile that I don't think many have gotten to see before. He looks right at home, comfortable, light, carefree. We both laugh as we throw ourselves fully into the music, simply enjoying the freedom of the night and this one moment of pure serendipity. By the time a slower melody comes along, I'm breathing hard, yet he seems completely unaffected, swaying to the notes with innate fluidity. He's watching me intently, and it doesn't escape me the scathing looks he sends to every other male that dares come closer. Yet he's not the only jealous one, not when all the women in attendance are gazing up at him like he's the eighth wonder of the world. The whispers, too, reach my ears, the fact that everyone knows it's Eamon, but no one can tell who his mysterious partner is. Eamon is unbothered by all the interest he's generating in the female population, and the fact that his attention is solely on me, not even once swayed by a show of skin or a too low bodice, thrills me to no end. More than anything, it gives me a confidence I've never had, making me feel beautiful, desirable, for the first time in my life.
You are the most beautiful sight I've ever seen, Lizzie.
He compliments me as he draws me close.
Never doubt that.
And there it is, that uncanny ability of his to guess my thoughts. If I had a superstitious bent like my mother, I would have said he wasn't entirely human. Alas, I prefer a more realistic approach, rooted in evidence and facts. The man before me might be mysterious and too alluring for his own good, but he is flesh and blood, muscle and sinew, coiling right around my fingertips. I still haven't quite figured you out, Aemon Dartan. Are you a roux, trying to steal my virtue, or are you after something else? I inquire languidly, studying him in an attempt to decipher him.
I will categorically steal your virtue. But you are correct. I am after something else.
He pauses, a dangerous glint in his eyes. And what is that?
Your soul, your very essence, and everything that makes you, you. Will you give me that, Lizzie mine? Will you surrender everything that you are to me?
I blink, suddenly taken aback by his request and the severity of his tone. No longer playful, his entire countenance changes, as if everything depends on one answer. Will you deserve it? I ask in a small voice, lost in the way his light blue eyes seem to turn even lighter, so much so they are almost white.
No one will ever deserve it, Lizzie.
He rasps.
No one.
He states emphatically.
But I would devote an eternity to earn the right to call it mine.
I stop in the middle of the dance floor. Time stops as everything fades away, until there's only him and me, my eyes on his on mine. Slipping my glove off, I bring my hand to his cheek, cupping it gently. He seems startled by the gesture, but he doesn't move to stop me. In fact, something akin to a purr escapes him as he sighs in pleasure, his own hand reaching out and covering mine, keeping it firmly in place. His skin burns where it touches mine, a forbidden caress. Yet as he slowly moves my hand, leading it to his mouth as he lays a chaste kiss atop my wrist, my heart simply stops in my chest, my lips part of their own volition, my pupils becoming so enlarged as if I'd used copious amounts of belladonna. He doesn't move. His lips are on my skin, on my naked skin, in the middle of the ballroom. It's with a marked delay that I realize people have stopped dancing all around us, everyone gawking at us. Their whispers becoming louder and louder, the question of the identity of the masked girl with Aemon pervasive on everyone's lips. Yet it's only for a moment. As if compelled, everyone suddenly turns their attention to their dance partners.
Shall we go somewhere more? Private?
He asks, and I find myself unwittingly nodding. I only know I am caught in his spell, ready to follow him everywhere. Taking my hand in his, he steers me towards the French double doors that lead to the Duchess's gardens. The night air surrounds us as Aemon shows me a secret spot deep within the maze-like garden.
We shouldn't be disturbed here.
He starts, though his mouth curls into a smile.
Or stared at.
That was quite scandalous, wasn't it? I chuckle, waving my ungloved hand in front of him. He grabs it, the hold gentle as is his touch when he swirls his thumb over my skin in circular motions.
That's nothing compared to what I want to do to you. Lizzie mine.
He whispers as his other hand comes to my face. He strokes my cheek lightly before moving further into my hair and pulling on the pins that keep the mask together. When it falls to the ground, he takes a step closer, his own mask seemingly falling too. Our gazes meet again. This time, Our expressions are naked. Our faces bared to one another.
But I won't. Not now. Not until you trust me wholly and irrevocably.
He says in a low voice. A sad smile pulls at his lips, and an odd feeling of déjà vu overtakes me. So no ravishing for me tonight, I joke, in an attempt to dispel this unusual melancholy that suddenly comes over me.
Don't sound so disappointed, love,
he drawls, pulling me closer.
You might just change my mind,
he says as he leans in, his breath caressing my cheek. Is this your way of proving to me that you're not after my virtue? I raise a brow.
No, this is my way of showing you that it's not your body I want, Lizzie. No, that is always an added bonus. I want all of you. I want to slowly unpack you, know your likes and dislikes, explore your mind as if it's the first time.
I blink, surprised at his choice of words. Before I can speak, though, he swoops me into his arms. A small gasp escapes me,